Hi guys, I'm Dan Reed and welcome back to the Career Dad Show. Pick up your phone, put it in the palm of your hand. That's the size and weight of Mike's daughter when she was born at 24 weeks. As if that wasn't enough, Mike and Gabby also started their own digital consultancy, Proofpoint Marketing, at the same time. The company's built upon flexible and remote working, so it's no surprise they're COVID ready. Let's jump into this fantastic episode. Welcome back to the Career Dad Show. Mike, how's it going?
Going great, Dan. How are you?
I'm very, very well, thank you. And you're in the US? Whereabouts?
Correct. I'm in Minneapolis.
Oh, nice. Is that Midwest?
Yep, that would be the Midwest, right smack dab in the middle. It's funny, it's called the Midwest, but we're about as far north as it can get in terms of large US cities go. So, you know.
Okay. And so we started talking because you set up, I believe with your wife, a marketing agency called Proofpoint Marketing.
Correct.
Which I think in itself is quite interesting. However, I think the reason it got set up is even more interesting. So if I'm right in understanding, your daughter was born extremely premature. Is that right?
Yes. So, yep. She was born at 24 weeks gestation.
Wow.
So for anybody who doesn't know, the average pregnancy is, you know, 38, 39 weeks. So she was pretty darn early.
Yeah, so that's about 6 months, is it? About five and a half, six months. Wow.
She was 4 months early.
Jeez. So I mean, how much did she weigh?
So the best way that I always describe it is I say, pick up your phone, put it in the palm of your hand. That's about the weight and the size.
Wow. Wow.
It was 11 ounces. 10 and a half inches.
So
she looked like a little alien. When she came out that way. It sounds funny now, but obviously at that point it wasn't, but yeah, that's how we describe it. She really looked like a little alien.
And how were there any complications in the pregnancy? Was there any idea that this might happen?
So initially, no. Everything was fine. We did all the ultrasounds and whatever, and we were actually planning to do like a little baby moon or whatever. Like a friend of ours was getting married. We were going to, like, it was right around the 21st week of pregnancy. So we're going to be like, okay, we'll do one more, like, you know, big trip. We're going to fly out to the West Coast, drive down the Pacific Highway, do all that stuff. So I skipped the 20th week ultrasound because everything was fine. It was literally scheduled the day before we were supposed to fly out. Yeah. So I was already taking 10 days off work. So I said, okay, this is just going to be another one of these. It's going to be normal. Everything is good. My wife, Gabby, went with her mom. I was at work, and I get a frantic phone call around 2 p.m., 3 p.m., something like that. Still at work. Gabby is crying, going, oh, my God, something's wrong. You know, doctors don't know, whatever. So I'm like, okay. So I left work, go over there, and that's where the 20-week ultrasound is where they pretty much said, hey, something's not right. Like, right. You know, we don't know exactly what, but something's off. Like, we're labeling you as high risk. So from there on, like, we knew that we still didn't know there was a possibility for early delivery because we didn't know what the heck problem was. And this is our first child, and right now it's our only child. So, which, by the way, for those listening, she's doing great now. She's almost five, and we're past all the scary stuff. But so then we went to go see some specialists. So at some point they did say, like, hey, she's tracking a couple of weeks behind. She's really small. And we did like genetic testing and whatever. And they said we kind of excluded pretty much all the known genetic issues that it could be. So like it wasn't Downs. It wasn't any of the other stuff. So we're like, okay, well, that's great. So she's fine. Like anatomically, everything is good. She's got two arms, two legs, like, you know, a brain, all the stuff's there, heartbeat, all that. But they still couldn't figure out like why she was so small. So she was tracking a couple of weeks behind in size. And there were some other things, you know, details we don't need to go into. But so we knew that something was off. And they said, okay, you know, we went for another appointment at 21 weeks. So we canceled our trip because they're like, hey, you should go see a specialist. So we canceled the trip, going to see the specialist at 21 weeks. They say they kind of confirm everything, but they still say, hey, we didn't really know exactly what the problem is. And the doc was awful. She pretty much, like, she was nice, but she kind of goes, well, so it could be this awful thing and this other awful thing and these other 15 awful things, or it could be nothing and she's just small. We're like, why didn't you just start with that?
Yeah.
Now, granted, it did end up being a pretty serious thing, but long story short, what it ended up being is preeclampsia. For anybody out there that knows it, it's about, I don't know, like maybe 5% of pregnancies or something have it. And it's pretty much
blood.
No, it's so theoretically nobody really knows exactly what the issue is still. But it's pretty much the woman's body is fighting off the pregnancy as like a foreign invader kind of thing. So everything just goes completely haywire. And the only way to cure it is delivery. Now what they try to do is prolong the pregnancy as long as possible so the you know, the baby can develop as long as they can inside the womb without endangering mother and child, etc. Now the problem is because the body's fighting it off, it's like blood pressure spikes, the liver starts going haywire, so like it's very, very dangerous for the mom. So sort of at some point you start, you know, they start kind of saying, okay, whose life is in danger more? And then off we go. So at 24 weeks is when they pretty much said, all right, there's nothing else we can do. We've tried everything. Like at this point, both people, you know, mom and baby's life's in danger. We're going to deliver. Like, that's it. So that's the story. There's, and you know, I don't know how deep you want to go into it. There's a bunch of stuff that happened. And like, we were in the hospital for a week, kind of on bed rest, or my wife was in the hospital for a week on bed rest. Obviously I was there. There's also like initially she got misdiagnosed and like it was pretty crazy times.
And yeah, I mean, I'm happy to go as deep into this as you. I mean, were you taking time off, you know, a few weeks before to go onto the holiday that got canceled, and then
I'm trying to actually remember whether I took. I think I was still
did you have time off. Or were you just at work?
I it's kind of a blur to be honest with you. Like I'm
imagine.
I want to say I'm sure there's a few days I just took off for sure.
Yeah.
But then like the day that we checked into the hospital was really rough, and then things kind of started in the first couple of days. So I think maybe I had a day or two off, and then I did some work remotely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the company I worked for was really good about everything, thankfully. Yeah. So they were very understanding and, you know, family first, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I remember I did some work from the hospital here and there, took some phone calls. Yeah. So I don't remember all the details, to be honest, as far as the work stuff.
Absolutely. But what was work for you? What were you doing?
I've been in digital marketing forever. So I was working for another marketing agency at the time, working on, you know, global e-commerce clients. So it actually involved a decent amount of travel. So I think I actually had to cancel. Now that I'm thinking, I think I might have had to cancel a trip to the UK, I think, because we had an office in the UK. I don't remember now. But yeah, anyway, that's what I was doing for work.
Yeah, yeah. But even this, right, it's so, it just is like, I know everything was happening with your wife and your baby, but it's, something was clearly happening to you as well, either mentally, physically, just because it's whether so much was happening, your brain couldn't process it, or it chose to just not, or, you know, like there's a lot going on for you.
Oh, so yeah, I mean, interesting. This is something I remember reading about or listening a podcast about or something, but like the human brain from, this is my like layperson's interpretation of what I heard from some like neuroscientist, but it was something along the lines of like the human brain is sort of built to kind of compartmentalize and like put away and forget all the really, really bad stuff. Because if you don't, you're like, I mean, that's sort of, I think that's sort of where like PTSD potential, whatever, like where you just can't, and you keep coming back to it and things trigger. I think that's where like there's something faulty and that's what happens. But then generally like you kind of lock it up, process it and put it away. Cause if otherwise it's just, you can't move on.
Yeah.
Right? Cause sure. I mean, my wife ended up with PTSD after the fact.
Yeah.
I'm sure I probably had some variation of it too, probably, because I mean, we're both in rough shape for a while.
And so then, you know, your daughter's born, and how was the, you know, how long, because 20, do you say 20, 26 weeks? You know,
24 weeks.
24 weeks. How, there's a point, there must be a point where you're kind of worried, is she going to survive?
Oh, for sure. I mean, they took us through all the numbers, and the numbers, like she's a miracle baby.
Right.
I don't know what the numbers are, a little better now because, you know, technology's evolved and with their understanding of prematurity, et cetera. So right now it wasn't uncommon to have a 24 weeker survive, but most 24 weekers are larger than she is.
Right. Okay.
So she's still, I believe, cause we stay connected to the neonatologist or whatever at the hospital. And she still, I believe, the second smallest to be born and survive at that hospital in Minneapolis. So they, at one point, we got into the hospital. Gabby was at 23 weeks pregnant. And the way that the laws are, up until 24 weeks, abortion is legal. Right. So they were obligated to pretty much ask us. They kind of told us, hey, here's the numbers. Like, the likelihood of her having a normal sort of life, if you will, you know, good quality of life was, like, I think they said, like, 20 or 30%.
Right.
That, like, if she's born now-ish.
Yes.
So it wasn't looking very promising, but we sort of, so we had to have the conversation. Like, to us, it wasn't really a question. We're like, nope, we're going to go through with it. But they did, I remember the doc actually sitting down on the bedside and trying to, like, explain everything to us, you know, in as nice of a way as possible, and kind of ask us the question, like, if this happens, do you want to, like, do you want to proceed, kind of thing?
Yeah.
And we said yes. And there's, like, there's drugs that they use to try to help. Because what they try to do is get the, they do a steroid injection to try to help with the lungs, the lung development. Because the lungs are some of the last organs to develop fully.
Okay.
So what they try to do is get the, they pretty much, they know that delivery is coming. They don't know how quickly exactly, but they know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So they try to get the lungs to develop as quickly as possible while they're prolonging the pregnancy. You know, so there's a lot of stuff that they're doing. But so they did that. We were lucky enough to get both doses of that shot. So I'm sure that helped. And yeah, and then was it 6 days later, and or 9:01 a.m.
And how long were you then in the hospital for afterwards?
Not that long.
Okay.
Well, actually, so my wife and I weren't in the hospital for long. We got, you know, discharged after 3 days, I think, 4 days. Okay. But our daughter, we were in the hospital for 6 months after that.
Wow. So she spent the first 6 months of her life living in a hospital.
I mean, pretty much she's, you know, she comes out, she's not fully formed.
Yeah,
right?
Of like, course. Yeah,
all the arms and legs are there and the organs are there, but they need to develop. So, yeah, she spent the first 2 months or so on very sort of high tech and severe ventilation. So, like, now with COVID, everybody kind of knows what ventilators are.
Yeah,
well, she was on pretty much every ventilation machine known to man at that point.
Right.
Because there's different ones and they do different things. And anyway, so she was on ventilation for the first, a little bit over 2 months. And then slowly they were able to wean her off of that, and she was on the cannula and CPAP and all that stuff.
And so how did, I mean, I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but how did that feel? You know, you leave the hospital without your daughter, and that's not what parents do, right? Like, you go, you, I know your 24 weeks is not, you know, the 38 foot, but what was that like, having to go, and even from a work perspective, going back and forth, I'm assuming daily, or at least as often as you can, like how
was that? It was, again, I mean, it's hard to really remember exactly at this point, because it's so, but I mean, it was surreal. I can tell you, like, I do remember us driving home from the hospital when my wife finally got discharged.
Yeah.
Now you know, usually what happens, okay, hey, you're ready to go. You check out and you go home and you got the baby with you. And here it was like, we checked out, but we went to the NICU and we stayed there and pretty much as late as we could. And then we went home late and, you know, whatever. So it was definitely surreal, because it was, and again, it's one of those things where you're, and this is, I process things a little bit differently. Like, I'm the type of person that, like, you know, kind of back against the wall. I'm like, okay, fine. I don't have an option. So here's what we're doing.
Yeah.
So I just sort of rolled with the punches, if you will. But it was, I mean, the schedule was pretty much, so Gabby, my wife, she had, she was an employee of one at a company that was starting up, and she got let go. So she lost her job while still in the hospital. So that's a whole other story. So she ended up being a stay-at-hospital mom. She was there pretty much all day, every day. And then I would work from the hospital 2 to 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the other days, I would go to work. And I would, after that, I would go straight to the hospital. We'd, you know, eat at the hospital cafeteria and all that fun stuff. So we were pretty much in the hospital for 6 months. I mean, we'd go home to sleep.
Yeah.
On most days, there was I think 3 or 4 occasions where we actually spent the night, because we got the phone call, or got the doctor sort of pulled aside and said, "Hey, you may want to stay here because we don't know if she's going to make it," kind of thing.
Wow.
So there was a few instances of that, but we made it through and she made it through, and yeah.
When was the first time where things were looking good, where you felt we're out of the woods now? And what did that feel like?
The first time that I think we really felt like we were out of the woods was when she was able to get the breathing tube pulled out. Because that's when we're like, okay, we're moving forward. Brilliant. And that wasn't, they tried it twice, if I remember right. First time they tried it and she wasn't working, so they had to re-intubate, I think once for sure, maybe twice. And then finally they were able to pull it out and she was able to stay stable and oxygen levels were good and all that stuff. Actually, so here's another interesting thing, because I'm guessing a lot of your listeners are in the UK. Mm-hmm. Again, we had the job that I was at, we had an office in the UK. So we had a lot of my counterparts were there and I would talk to them on a daily basis and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to one of my coworkers and telling her the story. And she was like, oh my God, that's crazy. The biggest children's hospital in London, she was saying, wouldn't have been able to take your daughter because she was too small. They wouldn't take anybody younger than 26 weeks. They don't have the equipment to handle. Because everything is microscopic. Like the tube the intubation tube, it was literally the smallest one that existed on the market. Wow. And they barely got it in. So pretty much then if they can't get it in, then child can't breathe, then that's that. So that's the other thing. Like a lot of hospitals can't handle, there's a small number of hospitals in the US and I'm guessing around the world that can handle a child that's this small, because they just don't have the equipment to manage it.
In a weird way, it's kind of lucky that if it were to happen, it happened where it did, because at least you were able to get the care.
I mean, Minnesota, Minneapolis is one of the better places to be if you get a major medical issue, because we have a lot of top notch. The Children's Hospital here is one of the top in the country. It's not like number one. And again, I don't know what those rankings are based on, but
yeah,
it's a very good one. You know, there's Mayo Clinic, which is close. So from a healthcare perspective, we're in a good, very good spot.
Yeah, yeah. And so 6 months go by, your daughter gets discharged, and you say now she's five?
She's going to be five in August. We're actually we're about 3 weeks away from her birthday.
Brilliant.
On the 16th.
And because I'm just thinking this through, her birthday is at the 24-week mark, right? As opposed to, so she should have been...
So we celebrate three birthdays. She's the lucky one that gets three. We celebrate August 16th. Because that's her actual birthday, per se. Yes. We celebrate December 6th, which was supposed to be her delivery date.
Yes.
And we celebrate February 6th, which was when she actually got discharged.
Brilliant.
So she gets three. In February, we don't celebrate as much for her as usually.
Yeah.
This year is obviously different for everybody, but usually we'll do some sort of volunteer thing. Like we'll go and, cook food at the Ronald McDonald House, at the hospital or something like that, sort of to commemorate her going home.
That's amazing. And before we go onto proof point, I just wanted to ask about that community side. So did you find that there was a group of other parents that you could talk to about this, or that you could join, or is there something that you found afterwards, or does it not exist?
That's a very good question. So I am not the type of person that needs that. Me, I get, when that kind of stuff happens, I get insular. I'm like, okay, mom, dad, wife, close family and friends. And that's it. I don't want to talk to other people. And I sort of made up my mind. Gabby and I both made up our minds that, I don't care what the numbers say, everything is going to work out fine. Like we just put that on our heads. And I don't know that helped her necessarily, Lana, our daughter, but it definitely helped us just kind of keeping our heads straight, I think. So Gabby found a bunch of preemie parent Facebook groups and all sorts of stuff. And for her, and not even right away, I think, again, it's sort of when things were really, really critical, I don't think we were even thinking about that. It was very much just kind of day-to-day survival type deal.
Yeah.
What we did do was we used Caring Bridge. I don't know if Caring Bridge is available overseas. I think they're just in the U.S. So we'll pretty much think of Caring Bridge as a private social network.
Okay.
To help you deal with severe kind of life issues, usually medical related. Like, hey, I'm going through cancer. I don't want to post all this stuff on Facebook and get a bunch of questions. I want it to be, you can make it as secure as you want. You can make it totally open. You can make it password protected, which is what password or invite protected, which is what we did. Cause we didn't want just random people. Like, great, it's nice that random people care, but I don't care for that. Like, we just sent out a link and people could share it between people who they knew. So we, like, our coworkers ended up in there, but it's sort of a, they can send you messages, but it's very much one-sided. It's just pretty much to think of it like a blog.
Yeah.
And we posted on there definitely a couple times a week. Initially it was almost every day, but it's sort of a way to keep everybody to date.
Yes.
Without, cause the first couple of days was insane. I would get texts from like 15, 20, 30 different people. I'm like, I can't deal with your shit, people. Like, go away. Like, I got my own problems to worry about. So then we're like, oh, CaringBridge. Because they actually were a client of mine at an agency I used to work at. So I'm like, oh, we should use this. So we set that up. And that was a lifesaver because it just helped us get our thoughts out and whatever. And whoever wanted to read it can. They can send you messages of support, that kind of stuff. So that was our main community. Obviously, with family. Actually, even with family, we said, hey, don't text us. Don't ask us questions. Like, if there's anything you need to know, go to CaringBridge. Here's the link. Yeah. Like, you're just going to annoy the crap out of us and drive us crazy if you ask us questions.
Yeah.
So that was really our community.
That's good. And did your family abide by those rules that you set?
Yeah, they did. That's, I mean, I think they saw that, like, okay, yeah, we don't have the time to respond to texts all the time. And I think there's a few people that try to break those rules, like cousins or whatever, and we just stop responding.
Yeah.
Said, hey,
do what's right for you.
Here's, you know, you can find the info whenever you want. Here's where it is.
Yeah.
It's not that we don't appreciate it. We just can't deal with it.
Well, yeah, that's it. No, I completely understand that element of it. obviously not what you went through. Proof point. So you've set up now with your wife Proof Point Marketing, which I believe is a digital marketing agency consultancy. Is that right?
Correct. Yep.
How long ago did you do that?
Theoretically, actually, I wrote a blog post or LinkedIn article about this a little while ago. The life cycle, if you will, of Proof Point very much is similar to the life cycle of our daughter.
Okay.
So technically, there's like three separate dates, I guess you could say. There's the, because what happened was Gabby lost her job as we were in the hospital. I, at that point, also after Lana came home, I ended up also switching jobs because I needed to make more money, pretty much is what it was. Like, I'm like, well, there's two things. One, too much, less travel and more money.
Sure.
So I switched to something that provided for both. And I started consulting on the side to make up the difference because we went from a double income to a single income. And I was just, I was a single consultant and I had maybe two or three clients. It was just Mike Grimberg Consulting. Then at some point I said, okay, let's make this a little bit more formal. Let's give it a name. And we came up with, and this was still just me. We came up with Proof Point and we incorporated it in, I think it was September of 2017 or 16. I forget the dates exactly.
Yeah.
I have to look it up. And then what happened was the company that I was working for, the startup, rapidly lost funding in the summer of 2017.
Right.
So we were and the good thing is Lana was doing better. She was off oxygen, like she was starting to walk and all sorts of stuff. And Gabby was ready to go back to work. And at the same time, I was about to lose my, I mean, the company was going into chapter seven, it was going bankrupt. So we sort of looked at each other and said, well, we're either going to go out and get corporate gigs or we're going to take my three clients and turn this into a company and do the thing. And the reality was, too, is while our daughter was doing better, she still had a lot of needs at the time. Like there was physical therapy, there was occupational therapy. If you looked at her now, you wouldn't be able to tell. Like, she's small.
Yeah.
Like on the weight. From a weight perspective, but she's average height, I guess, for her age. And she looks fine. Like there's no physical abnormalities, nothing, whatever. So right now you'll be able to tell, but she was behind, right? Because of how she came into the world. So she needed a bunch of therapies. There's a bunch of doctor's appointments. She still has some medical needs. Like she has a enzyme deficiency, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So lots of stuff needed to happen. And she was still very fragile from a medical perspective. So it's not like we could just put her in a daycare. Like, for that matter, the doctors pretty much said, whatever you do, don't put her in a daycare. That's a guaranteed trip back to the hospital.
Yeah.
And we did get readmitted once. She did, even without daycare, she did catch a thing, and we spent 2 weeks at the hospital. So we were trying to avoid all that. So we said, okay, well, we got to be at home. Well, at that point, remote work wasn't really, people did it, but it wasn't that common, definitely not full time. So we're like, okay, well, I guess that answers that question. We're doing our own thing. And we very quickly said, okay, we're not just going to, this isn't going to be a stopgap. If we're going to do it, we're actually going to turn into a business, and we're, you know, at some point have employees and all that. So we wanted to build a company that accommodated other people like us. It doesn't have to be necessarily people with kids with medical issues, even though it can very much so, but just regular. And again, right now it's almost like, oh, okay, great that everyone's doing this. So it doesn't sound as, you know, new per se, but back then there wasn't, there were companies that were fully remote that had flex hours and all that, but there weren't that many and they weren't that prominent. So we just, from the get go, we really wanted to build a family first culture where other people can, you know, care for their kids, care for loved ones, you know, take time off and not, you know, like all that stuff.
And so how, because I'm fascinated by all, you know, I work in quite a corporate environment, and a lot of the things that I talk about is around how, you know, we are results based and outcome driven. So why do we confine ourselves with these, you know, 9 to 5? Why are we measuring the output of something by a metric that is irrelevant to the output of something? And it seems like you've just taken that whole concept and gone, yeah, this is nuts. Like, let's just, and is that how you run your company, is just completely outcome focused?
Yeah. I mean, we're not perfect. Like, we're still figuring things out. Sure. I mean, and we're a small boutique agency. We've got 5 full-time people and some contractors, but you know, we do track our time, but not for the purpose of micromanaging people. It's strictly to understand profitability, right? Yeah. That's the only reason we do it. Yeah. And like, when we onboard people, we even tell them, hey, you're going to have to track your time. I don't care when your time is tracked. Like, if you do your best work from 4 a.m. to, you know, 8 a.m., great, do that. And then just like the only thing is, because we're a service business, like, we have a rule where you have to be available. Yes. Hey, you know what? If you got all your work done and you want to go to the beach, just bring your phone with you so you can answer an email or a question if something is really urgent. Because we are working with clients who, right now everything is different, but theoretically, we're working with clients who have a 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Where most of the email communication, whatever that happens 9 to 5.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing we ask. But other than that, if people want to work early, most people do still end up working that 9 to 5, I just think, just because we're so used to it.
Yeah, for sure.
But they don't have to. Like, we've had it where, you know, someone's got a doctor's appointment, whatever, they got to take a couple hours off. Okay, well, if you got everything done, then don't worry about it. You don't have to come back to work. And if you didn't, then okay, then maybe you'll need to work at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I've got 2 questions on that, which is, one is around the talent. You say you've got 5 full-time employees. I'm just wondering what the way that you work and operate and run your business, what that's done from a talent perspective. Have you noticed a difference or a kind of a level of talent that attracts?
It's hard to say, just because, again, we have a very small sample size.
Sure.
But I mean, I can tell you that all the people we have are very good.
Yeah.
And I mean, can I tell you that they're better is such a relative term, right? Because better in what way?
Sure. Yeah.
But it does open things up in the sense of, like, none of the people that work for us, the contractors actually are mostly interesting. Like, well, a lot of the contractors we work with are mostly local to the Minneapolis, Minnesota area. Mm. At least the content people. But our full-timers are not here. They are, we got somebody that's out in Baltimore. We have somebody that's out in close to Philadelphia, et cetera, right? So, and we've hired people in the past in, you know, on the East Coast, West Coast, in kind of everywhere. So it does open things up from a recruiting perspective, for sure, in terms of we get more applicants, I think, in general as a small company.
Yeah.
And they do tend to be, again, it's hard to say, but they tend to be pretty good. And like, you know, like, they're almost impossible to find a job in corporate, because one of them started working for us when she had a newborn. Literally, her baby was like maybe a month and a half or 2 months old or something. And she has a very set schedule because she needs to do feedings and whatever. And, you know, sometimes the baby's on camera with us. And I'm like, first, you know, again, people need to get used to it. We're like, I don't care. Like, on an internal meeting, I don't care. Like, you need to have her on your lap. Fine.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
You know, and then our other, the other woman who we've got on staff, she actually used to run her own consultancy and she just got tired of it. And like, she's like, no, look, I just want to do this specific thing, work for somebody, but I also want to be spent, you know, I want to be more available to my daughter. She's got an 8-year-old, you know, stuff like that. So like, that's, those are the types of people that find us. Like one of our contractors that used to work with us, she's a military wife. So they move around a lot. It's very hard for those people to find steady jobs because people look at them as a liability.
Yes.
Don't know why, but they do. Like, most jobs can be done remotely.
Yes.
Again, right now it's different, I think. But
I want to come on to that, but just before I do that, the second question I had was, how do you find working with companies that might be more rigid when you have such a flexible framework? Does it cause any problems or any expectations?
Again, we've learned a lot. It did. Because we didn't set the expectations up from the beginning initially. Even before we had employees, we had a really god-awful client at one point. And so I'll tell you an anecdote that sort of describes this. My wife's family is, she has a lot of family in Brazil. Her mom's Brazilian. So we would used to go over there. Since we've been married, we've been over there twice. Three times, sorry. So we went over there back in, was it 2017? I believe it was. Might get the year wrong, but I think it was 2017. And this was when we had this client, and again, we can work from anywhere. It doesn't matter where the time zone is almost the same. It's a couple hours off. So that it wasn't even an issue, but we told them like, hey, we're going to be traveling. We're going to have limited, whatever. We front loaded a bunch of work. And it was a disaster. Like, they would email us all the time. It was fire drills over and over and over again. We ended up firing the client at that point, and they were our largest. So that was rough. But really, it came down to we didn't set the expectations. Like, they were local. We had spent a lot of time in their office, and they were like, they just got used to it. And the expectation wasn't set that, hey, we're a remote company. We don't have to be in your office.
Yes.
You know, so we learned a lot of lessons through that and other experiences. But now, I mean, now definitely not because everybody's remote, right? So like, that's help. But even before that, it to a certain like it brings on a set of challenges that are from a services like client services needs to change because it's a lot easier. Hey, we're at your office. We can take you out to lunch. We can do this. So we're working through figuring some of those things out. But from a delivery perspective, no, like for the most part, clients like it. We're efficient. You know, they don't need to travel. We don't need to travel. We get in, we get our stuff done. We're very good at what we do. And it's very outcome. And again, for a lot of clients, it's outcomes based, right? If you deliver and they get the revenue that you want, great.
Yeah.
They don't care whether you come into the office or not.
Exactly. No, it definitely resonates. And
you know, we'll do things like we'll send them gift boxes. You know, we have our onboarding process is a lot that has some of that in it. Client onboarding, that is. Yeah. So that helps.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted to talk about COVID because one of my fears as we went into lockdown in the UK was there were a lot of people talking around, this is going to be a great test for flexible working and remote working. And my fear was that's not just an internet connection and a laptop. That's a culture. That's trust. It's so much more than the tools. I've seen companies and individuals struggle with that. And I just wanted to know, one, has COVID changed anything for you guys at all, how you work together? And then secondly, you know, how have you found now interacting with clients who are working remotely who potentially haven't before?
So for us, it didn't change a thing in terms of how we interacted. Actually, like, we became even more flexible, I guess, because you had, like, again, everybody's kids are at home, so what do you do? Okay, like, we just did, we do like a quarterly wellness exercise or bring in, like we did meditation and yoga. And for the last like 20 minutes or whatever it was kids yoga. So the kids came in and, you know, did yoga, whatever. So it's like things like that. But yeah, it's for us, really nothing has changed other than the fact that really, I guess it's put our culture that we've sort of communicated to the test to a certain extent. I would say that we've kind of passed with flying colors, I guess you could say. Before COVID, we were interviewing people for positions, and we had a whole set of questions that we would ask to really understand, like, why do you want to work remotely? Because for a lot of people, it's they want to do it for the wrong reasons, meaning, yes, they want the flexibility, but that's the only thing. Like, well, that's not enough. That's about you. Like, why do you think remote work is going to make you better at your job? Why do you think that it's the right way to run a company? Because if you don't have a good answer to that, this is probably not for you, because you're most likely going to run into issues. Mm. For people who are used to that person-to-person interaction, it's really tough. For you asked about clients too.
Yes,
for the most part, I would say it's actually been pretty good. Like, most companies that we've worked with have done a pretty good job of becoming more flexible and accommodating and things like that. That said, I mean, we've had a former client of ours who forced people to go into the office because they have an office culture. Mm. I'm like, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care how many, like, I understand if you want to give people the option.
Yeah.
But forcing everybody at a tech company to go back into the office is ridiculous in my mind.
Yeah.
There's no need for it.
So what is the future for Proofpoint? What are your, do you have like big plans, or what's the next kind of step for you?
The future really, like, what we're trying to build, so we're a B2B digital marketing agency, really performance marketing agency. And what we're looking to do is build out these kind of standardized service offerings, pretty much packages, and build out an analytics team. Like, that's our next kind of thing, is build out a formal marketing analytics team to support that, as well as, you know, the content team and the paid media team, et cetera. So we've got a, you know, I guess you can call it a 5-year plan, sort of what we want to achieve. But, like, we want to stay small. We're not trying to be the next, you know, $100 million agency kind of thing and get acquired by WPP or whoever, you know, one of the conglomerates. Like, that's not what we want. For us, it really is a lifestyle thing. And for the people that work here, we want it to be a lifestyle thing. Mm. And I think that's really hard to do with aggressive growth plans.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And the last question that I wanted to ask you was, what do you think the best piece of parenting advice either that you've received or that you would give to someone else? What is something that you kind of live by that you would want to share with others?
One of the things that we really try to do from the very beginning with our daughter is, this might sound weird, but not treat her like a child. Like, yes, she's a child. She 100%. Has a childhood. She goes out and plays and whatever. But we'll have fairly open conversations with her about, you know, like, she's around, like, we work from home. We worked at home for years. So she asked us about business. Like, literally, there's one day where I needed to get on Gabby was upstairs working and I was downstairs with Lana and we're sitting having breakfast. She was having breakfast. I was having my coffee. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to have to go do a phone call. She goes, oh, who do you have the phone call with? I'm like, oh, it's with a client. She's like, oh, okay. Well, what's a client? So I explain the client. And then I'm like, oh, she's like, oh, so you work for the client. I'm like, well, for whatever reason, I decided to explain, like, how the business works. I'm like, well, no, mommy and daddy have employees and here's their name, because she's met them on camera. Like, you know, here's Megan, here's Kristen, and they work for mom and dad. And then they do the work for the clients. And then she looks at me and goes, so, because she's looking at the diagram, I drew it out for her. She's like, so what do you guys do? I'm like, okay, I guess I should probably improve that diagram. You know, like, two of my grandparents passed away early last year. So Lana would have been 4. And she understood enough to ask the question. So we're like, well, what's the point of hiding it? So we just had, you know, we took her aside and we explained it to her. And, you know, you can kind of see the, like, connecting to that. So she understands they're no longer here and she's able to deal with it as a normal person. I think that's a really important thing in my mind.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, I've got my son's nearly 6 and I always say I talk to him like an adult in an age appropriate way. And I think that's, you know, we have some fascinating, my whiteboard, he was drawing a decision tree. So we were talking about marketing automation. And so a decision tree about whether he should have a bath or not. And the actual came out funnily enough. But yeah, I just think it's, yeah, introduce them to the world that they're going to be a part of as it evolves. I think that's completely cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, look, Mike, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you, and thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Yeah, happy to share the story, and hopefully it helps somebody else that's in a similar situation.
That's all we've got time for this week. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Career Dad Show. If you did, have you got 10 seconds to rate the podcast? Maybe you've got 20 and can write a review. I appreciate all of you guys for listening. See you next week. Stay cool, be kind.